Is that Al?
No.
Nope. Well, good afternoon and welcome to the Water Supply Bank Mitigation Committee meeting, number 1-15. Our committee is comprised of Bert Stevenson, Al Barker, Roger Chase, and Jeff Raybould. And Bert, Roger, and Jeff are on the phone. I mean, Bert's here. Roger and Jeff are on the phone, and we're waiting for Al, but we can get started. And Al's to join us sometime here in just a little bit.
And Pete's
And we got Pete Vandermeulen on the phone as well. And with that being said, Remington, would you like to kick off with item number one and explain that if you would?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It'd be my pleasure. There are four agenda items today before the Water Supply Bank and Mitigation Bank Committee. The first item will be an interim groundwater rental policy for the Wood River Valley. The second item is the Water Supply Bank's management of leased water rights that are subject to an IDWR administrative curtailment order. The third item would be management of water rights that are indefinitely leased to the bank. And the fourth and final item of the agenda is going to be the application of the filing fee rule as applied to lease proposals to the Water Supply Bank. So regarding the first item, the interim groundwater rental policy for the Wood River Valley, the bank is seeking to implement this interim groundwater rental policy for a number of factors, number of reasons. What's brought us to this point is that surface and groundwater of the Big Wood River drainage are interconnected, and diversions of groundwater from wells can deplete the surface water flow in streams and rivers. New groundwater diversions can cause injury if they intercept the flows of streams, rivers, and groundwater that would normally flow to prior surface and groundwater rights. In 1991, the department created the Big Wood River Groundwater Management area to prevent any new diversions of groundwater from injuring prior surface and groundwater rights, including storage rights in Magic Reservoir. And the bank is required to ensure that no injury is permitted to occur through new diversions of groundwater through rentals from the Water Supply Bank. So what that means is, at this point, with the groundwater management area and in consideration of the interconnected groundwater flows and surface water flows of the Big Wood River drainage, the best way to ensure that no injury is permitted to occur is to evaluate groundwater modeling or stream depletion analyses for all groundwater rentals. The department is currently working with USGS to develop a groundwater model for the valley, but it is not expected to be completed for another year. In advance of the introduction of that model, we're seeking to implement this interim groundwater rental policy to allow us to streamline the process of considering rental requests. So effectively, where we're at right now is that groundwater rentals in the valley should submit a groundwater modeling impact analysis. However, to assist renters with that process, we've created this interim policy that will allow us to streamline the evaluation procedures. I've asked our technical hydrogeologist, Mike McVay, to join us today in case there are any questions about the water flow in the valley, but I am not a technical hydrogeologist, and when I'm evaluating rental applications, I need to take it to Mike in order to do the analysis of groundwater impacts. So with anticipated increased demand for rentals in the valley, and to avoid inundating Mike and hydrology staff with reviewing rental requests, I've asked Mike to help us with implementing a protocol that we could consider that will allow us to streamline the process. And this interim policy is that approach. And what it calls for is delineating the groundwater aquifer into 19 zones. There are 11 zones that correspond to the 11 tributaries to the Big Wood River itself. And then the valley is separated into three zones, from the Sawtooth National Recreation Area in the north down to the Hiawatha Canal is the first zone. We're calling it the Ketchum Zone. From the Hiawatha down to the District 45 canal is the secondary zone. We're calling that the Haley zone. And then from the District 45 canal to the top of the Bellevue triangle is the third zone. When you get into the triangle, there's the confined and the unconfined aquifer, which we've split up into two and then separated it into eastern and western halves. It looks like a lot. And in fact, in your materials, there's a map that you'll see where it's delineating the zones. But what our interim policy calls for is if we can keep rentals of groundwater within the zone, if someone requests to rent water that was leased in the zone, then a straightforward stream depletion analysis that is conducted following this interim guideline can be reviewed by water supply bank staff, and we can do standard processing on it. If individuals propose an application to rent groundwater that does not conform to this interim policy, we will have to refer it to the hydrology section, and we cannot guarantee standard processing of the rental request. So this is the bank positioning itself to do a little bit more work in order to keep the bank moving quickly.
Remington, if I might, someone just joined us. Who just joined us?
Al Barker.
Al, welcome. Thank you.
Good to have you. Sorry about the background noise.
That's fine. It's good to have you here with us. Al, by the way, we have with us all the members of the committee. We have Bert's here with me, and on the phone we have Roger and Jeff as well, and Pete's on the phone as well. Thank you. If you might continue then.
Hey, I've got a question, if I may, Vince.
Sure.
This is Roger. Remington, when you say that the groundwater has to be leased in the zone, does that mean there is no way that groundwater can be leased out of the zone once we adopt these rules?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Chase, no. It's an interim policy, and even with this interim policy, we can consider rental requests across the zone. However, that will require a higher level of analysis that will not be done by water resource agents who work in the water supply bank. Therefore, any request that is requesting to move water across the zones is going to have to go to IDWR hydrology for review. And depending on what their workload is, we can't guarantee standard processing on that.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Well, Radebert, you had one.
Yeah, thank you. Remington, what's our number of leases? Do we have are we building a backlog on those leases now? Or what do we normally deal with in a year?
Sure. In terms of the requests to rent water from the bank, so right now we are currently holding the 2015 rental requests pending the public issuance, the formal issuance of this guidance. I don't know the exact number of rental requests that we're holding, but there are numerous rental requests. We see on average about 20 rental requests throughout the year. But I might advise, call you to remember at the previous meeting of the Water Supply Bank Committee, Rob Whitney joined us from our Compliance Bureau, and the department is beginning to issue preliminary notices of violation to water users in the valley. We anticipate a significant increase in demand for rental water coming from the Wood River Valley, and that's really one of the reasons that precipitated this interim policy, is getting ready for increased demand for rental water.
Other questions?
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Barker.
Al Barker. Remington, I apologize if you already explained this because I joined late, but how were the 19 different zones arrived at, and how does these zones comport with the fact that we don't yet have the model done for the Wood River Valley?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Barker, thank you. Great question. The zones correspond to the areas in which we see significant water usage. And we split the zones along points that are significant. So, for example, the 11 tributaries to the Big Wood River, Croy Creek, Quigley Creek, Siemens Creek, etc., The 11 tributaries are 11 zones. And then the Bellevue Triangle is split into four zones. The remaining portion of the valley is split four ways. So from the Sawtooth National Recreation Area all the way down to the Hiawatha Canal is the most northern zone. And then from the Hiawatha down to the District 45 Canal is the secondary zone. The third zone is from the District 45 Canal to the top of the triangle, the bypass, the baseline bypass canal. And then the river channel itself of the Big Wood River, there is a 200-foot wide area in which any groundwater pumping is going to be pumping directly and immediately from the Big Wood River. So the zones are zones in which we feel reasonably comfortable that if we can limit the movement of water rights within the zone, we can limit the impacts and prevent them from propagating throughout the valley and impacting major current diversions to prior appropriators.
So the zone, Mr. Chairman?
Al.
I thought the 200 foot from the river zone was essentially de facto no-go area without mitigation anyway. Is that wrong?
So
I mean, you can't get a transfer or a new application in that zone because it impacts surface water directly.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Barker, if the water supply bank receives a request to rent water within that zone, we would only consider renting water rights that are currently leased in, valid water that's available and leased in within that zone. And though it would not require a stream depletion analysis because we accept that it is directly and immediately connected to the river, we would still consider the distance between the lease and the rental point of diversions to ensure that no injury would be allowed to occur. It's not cut and paste that a transaction would be approved. It's simply that within that zone, we could consider the rental request without the stream depletion analysis.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I have another question, if I may.
You may.
What does the one-year term do for existing leases of groundwater or that have already been approved? Or say longer than that. So we got a 5-year lease that's out there. We've got a policy that says we're only going to allow transfers within these zones, and we're going to leave that and have that rental take place on a year-by-year basis. So what does that do for our existing long-term leases?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Barker, we will continue to honor the lease and contracts and the rental agreements that are currently in place. This interim policy, and I would like to reiterate, it is an interim policy until we have an established transfer policy that is being utilized in the valley. We expect that data will be coming forward increasingly within the next year and will allow us to reevaluate the policy a year from now. Perhaps the model may be available a year from now, or it may be longer. So We will honor those rental agreements that are currently in place for multiple years, but this interim policy is allowing us to begin considering with greater detail new and future rental requests in order to limit the potential for injury.
Anything further, Al?
No, Mr. Chairman, thank you.
Thank you. Other comments?
This is Roger again. I have two more questions.
Go ahead, Roger.
One is a follow-up, and I assume this is right. All the water rights that are in the water bank are existing water rights. That is correct, isn't it? We're not going to be punching new wells out there.
No.
And then the second question has to do with in no way affects surface water, the rules that we're making, and particularly, as I understand it, if there's a surface right in a water bank, if there's a call and that's a junior water right, does that water get curtailed in a water bank, or is it protected somehow?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Chase, I'll answer those two questions. So to your first question, that is correct. These are already existing decreed or licensed water rights. There are no new uses of water that aren't authorized to be used through the bank. And our rental does not permit the construction of a new well. So we would only be seeing groundwater rentals at locations where a groundwater well is already existing. And Mr. Chase, you are correct. This is only for groundwater rentals. This is in no way reflective of the policy considering surface water rentals. And ultimately, this interim procedure is going to allow us, again, to consider rental requests with ease. We can guarantee that we will process rental requests in a standard fashion if they are submitted corresponding to this interim guidance. If there are alternative forms of groundwater modeling that are proposed, the bank can still consider it. Again, however, we will need to send it to IDWR's hydrology section, so we can guarantee as quick a turnaround if it doesn't conform to these procedural guides.
Okay, thank you. The last part of that was not necessarily with this groundwater plan, and I should know this. If you have a surface water right in the water bank, and there's a call made, and that water right that you have in the water bank's a junior water right, the being in the water bank doesn't protect that junior water right. It becomes part of the call. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Chase, that's correct. The water master in the water district may curtail surface water rights that are in the bank. That is a natural part of water right administration. So if someone seeks to rent a junior priority water right, they do run the business risk of renting a water right that may not be available for the full year.
Thank you.
Any other comments?
This is Jeff.
Go ahead, Jeff.
Just a clarification for what Remington just explained to Roger. If someone puts a groundwater right into the water supply bank, the only way it can be rented out is to someone who already has an existing well. Somebody can't drill a well to utilize that lease?
Mr. Chairman.
Okay, that helps me, Jeff. Thanks.
Well, I want to know if that doesn't make sense to me, because if that's the case, if you cannot drill a well to utilize a lease out of the bank, how does that apply to surface water? Can you only lease surface water if you already have a point of diversion in the river or stream where the water is?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Raybould, when we receive a rental request, we request on the form to know which point of diversion will be utilized. Regarding groundwater rights, we do require that there is already an existing groundwater diversion. We don't authorize the construction of a well through a groundwater rental. So there must already be an existing groundwater rental, or sorry, a groundwater water right to rent groundwater. Regarding surface water, yes, that is correct, that normally we would expect that they already have a point of diversion along the surface water source. However, we have received requests to rent water that use a temporary point of diversion, such as a truck that would seek to divert water and then move it somewhere else for use elsewhere, for dust abatement or for other purposes. We have seen rental requests of that nature.
Jeff, any follow-up there? No new wells?
So I guess I'm just wondering if we aren't creating a double standard that might be difficult to defend in the future if in fact, with a surface water right placed in the water supply bank, someone can access that through a lease and divert it wherever they need to, and yet with a groundwater right, the only way we'll let that be leased and accessed is through an existing point of diversion. And I can see where that might be a problem at some point in the future if we don't treat everybody the same.
Any other thoughts? Yeah, Bert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Remington, does this only apply to the Wood River Valley?
That's
because
correct.
That statement you just made has not been policy in the past with groundwater rentals. They've been drilling new wells to use that rental water that they've just rented. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman,
this is outside of the
Wood River.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Stevenson, this is specific to the Wood River Valley, but it is the policy of the water supply bank that a rental of water, of groundwater, does not authorize the construction of a well. If an individual has an already existing well, a groundwater well, then we can consider renting water to them from that point of diversion. But in order to be permitted for a new well, that's through the underground injection unit. That's not the bank's purview.
Well, that's a different issue than we're on here, but that's one we need to get some clarification on, Remington, because I'm familiar with some wells outside of the Wood River where they have gone out and drilled new wells, and this has been within the last 18 months.
I think what Remington is trying to say is that the water bank lease does not in and of itself, or water bank rental, excuse me, does not in and of itself authorize the construction of a well. But if they can get the well authorized for construction, you can rent the water to it.
That's correct.
So there's one more step involved. Any other committee members have comments? Hal Anderson, you had your hand up there.
Mr. Chairman,
ago. And just before you, I give you some time here, I hear the phone. Is there somebody else on the line besides committee members?
This is Pete. I fell off and came back on.
Oh, okay, good. Okay, thank you, Pete, for clarifying that. Hal?
Mr. Chairman, thanks for entertaining my Remington. Thanks for entertaining my question. For those of us that have clients in the Wood River Valley area, and may indeed be interested in either renting or leasing water into the bank, and they are between zones, I'm assuming that there will be a process in place whereby we could do the technical analysis, the modeling analysis ourselves as engineering consulting firm, and submit that with the application to speed the process up. Is that understood to be part of the process?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Anderson, yes, that is understood. The value of this interim procedural guidance is such that if we receive rental requests that conform to this policy, it does not need to go to any technical hydrology staff for review. The water resource agents can review it on their own. If it's going to be otherwise, we're going to have to refer it to technical staff here at the department. And so that will create an additional delay in processing it. We can't guarantee standard processing.
Okay, but if we, as an engineering consulting firm, could do a modeling analysis, a Dice equation analysis, or something like that to submit with our applications to the department, then would that be able to be processed, or would that still have to go through hydrology?
Well, actually, I'd like to offer an opportunity to our hydrology staff to comment on what would be acceptable documentation for consideration of a rental request. And since Mike Bay is here,
sure. Mr. Chairman.
Mike.
Hal, yeah, absolutely, you can do that. And we have a draft document right now that goes through the technical aspects of this policy, and in that I lay out, you know, any standard stream depletion analysis we'll accept. We also give access to a freely available software, and that way that puts it in a framework that the water resource agents will be able to understand and use it, and that just speeds it up a lot more. You don't have me, you know, looking under the hood quite so hard and breaking out the microscope and things like that. And so it's just a time and processing, but absolutely, I appreciate seeing the analysis you guys do.
And I might just add that we can commit to processing any rental request, or at least reviewing it and doing our utmost to process every rental request that we receive. And again, if it conforms to the guidance that we're issuing here, then we'll go at it straightforward. If it is otherwise, and Mike needs to consider it, then we can't guarantee what his workload would be and how you would remove it.
And that was my point. We might be able to satisfy and assist in that if we can work with Mike on the process. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, with that said, I'd like to put before the committee that the bank is eager to issue this information publicly so that we can share it with those who would be waiting and ready to submit a rental request for 2015. If the Water Supply Bank committee members are in support of this, then I would seek a recommendation of support to issue this publicly.
Members of the committee, where do we stand on this? We have consensus that we have a recommendation here. I would so entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, this is Jeff. As a committee, do we have the authority to put an interim rule in place, or can we make a recommendation to the board and then have the board actually adopt that interim rule?
I believe that we've talked about this earlier, that at this point we can make that recommendation, and then that recommendation will go to the board, will it not?
That's correct.
Mr. Chairman, one point of clarification: it's not a rule. Only the legislature has the final authority to issue rules. This would be a procedural guidance in order to streamline and speed up the processing of water supply bank applications in the Wood River Valley in advance of the groundwater model being completed. In order to keep the water supply bank open for business in that valley, protect senior water right holders, while the groundwater model was being completed, and then when that's done, you can roll out a full-blown transfer tool that consultants can use in preparing their analysis.
So in answer to your question, Jeff, I think where we are is where we have been with all of our committee meetings, that our recommendations are to the full board, and then the board sanctions that with a resolution, I presume.
That's correct.
And then after that, you could accept, or can you accept, any applications prior to that time? For the clarification of the audience.
For the clarification.
I would think you could accept applications anytime. I think you just ought to make those who are applying aware that the board is considering implementing this interim guidance along a parallel track of getting the Wood River groundwater model in place.
And as I understand right now, those applications are we accepting applications at this time, or are we holding those back?
It's a great question, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Raybould. We've actually received great support and assistance from the water user community and from consultants who have been holding their 2015 rental requests for the Wood River Valley pending the issuance of this interim groundwater rental policy. And so if the committee members are in support, I guess where I would be, where I'd like to be, is to say tentatively that we can share this information publicly so that we can begin accepting rental applications, and then once the board has had a chance to consider it, and if so, approve it through a formal resolution, then we will use this information to process 2015 rental requests of groundwater.
Mr. Chairman, we're having a board meeting in 2 weeks anyway, right?
Yes, we are. We're having 2 weeks. Bert, go ahead.
Why can't we just have a recommendation and then let the board decide in 2 weeks? That's not going to change anything.
That was my question. Can this be put on the agenda for our regular board meeting?
Mr. Chairman, Bert and Al, that is the plan, that if this committee is in favor of going this direction, we'd queue it up for the board meeting in 2 weeks to put in front of the board.
In the form of a resolution, is that correct, Mr. Penn?
Remington's going to need to work with John Holman on that to figure out whether it takes the form of a resolution or a motion or something like that to give a, you know, the affirmative nod from the board that, yeah, this is the way we want you to do things in the Wood River Valley until the groundwater model is rolled out.
Mr. Chairman, this is Jeff.
Go ahead, Jeff.
I think I would be reluctant in leading potential lessors or lessees in one direction or another prior to the board taking action in 2 weeks. I guess I would be concerned that if we go out and say, well, this is probably what we're going to do, that people would begin to make plans and reliances on that, and it in fact may not be what happens after the full board deliberates and decides this.
But we can make a recommendation. This committee, I think we have the challenge of either accepting or rejecting the recommendation that's been made to us.
Well, I'm fine making the recommendation to the board. Where my concern lies is going out and telling the public that the committee has agreed to this, and this is, and so go ahead and plan accordingly. Because I don't think we have the authority to say that this is in fact going to be the governing principles for the Wood River for 2015 until the board says so.
And I agree with that fully. I don't think that we have that authority, even if we would want to do that. I think all we do is recommend to the board. So I think what we're looking for is whether we want to, in fact, recommend it to the board.
This is Roger. I think that's correct. You know, we need to recommend it to the board to see what they come up with. I would also, a question I had during that two-week time before it gets to the board, when John Holman looks at this with Remington, there may be some tweaks they find they need to make too. So I think Jeff's caution is merited, and maybe Remington in the wake, and when someone brings something in, you can say, this still hasn't been approved by the board, so make sure they understand that, that it might change between now and then. Does that help at all, Jeff?
Yeah, I mean, if staff believes that we need to take action on this before the board meeting, I think on January the 23rd, then we should probably ask the chairman to call a meeting, a teleconference, and we'll act on it as soon as staff can be ready to present it to the full board. Otherwise, I think we better just keep our powder dry until the board meeting on the 23rd.
And you know, I concur with that completely, and I think everybody of the committee would concur with that. And the only thing we're looking for is a recommendation to the board that this be adopted at the board meeting by the way of a resolution or some other motion.
I would move to make that recommendation, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Raybould. Do I hear a second?
I would second it.
Thank you, Mr. Stevenson. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Thank you, gentlemen.
So that there's no misunderstanding, Remington, it isn't that it shouldn't go out, but we're I personally feel the same as Jeff does, to float this out there before the board takes action. It isn't that we don't trust what you're doing, it's just that let's get her.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Stevens, Mr. Raybould, and other committee members, we will prepare a resolution to go before the full board to explain this interim policy. We will hold on any public announcement of this interim policy until the board has considered it and made a recommendation or a motion in support. And I think that should be fine.
And as your chairman, I think caution is in order, even though it's an interim just for 1 year, that we're very cautious because we certainly don't want to impact any senior water users as we move forward. That being said, Remington, would you like to lead us through item number 2?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Item number 2 is in regards to management of leased water rights that are subject to an IDWR administrative curtailment order. The Water Supply Bank Subcommittee previously discussed this topic, and the committee made clear to departmental staff, to the Water Supply Bank staff, that their policy is that water rights should not be considered for rental if those water rights are subject to a curtailment action or curtailment order. However, it requires greater clarity that we are speaking specifically of an IDWR administrative order curtailing a water right and not a water district water master curtailment action that is a normal part of water right administration. So to clarify, water rights can be curtailed throughout the season of use when the flow is no longer available to satisfy them. And that is an administrative curtailment action. The bank can still consider rentals of surface water to meet goals such as the Lemhi rental pool and other actions if water rights might be subject to an administrative curtailment throughout the season of use. However, the bank would not consider the rental of a water right from an area that is subject to an IDWR curtailment order if it means that the water right was pulled out of that area and then made available for rent elsewhere. I should add that if the committee is still in agreement that this is the policy that they would like enacted, I will prepare a resolution for the upcoming board meeting to make a formal issuance of this policy and have the board issue a resolution on the matter.
Questions or discussion? Committee members? Bert?
Mr. Chairman, this is Jeff. I thought we pretty well decided that's how it should be, and I think that should be a recommendation from our committee to the full board as well.
You're right, Mr. Raybould. At the last meeting we had discussed this, and we were headed in this direction. And I think at that committee meeting we talked about we would be bringing this up again, and committee members could be thinking about it if there was any questions. Bert, you had a question?
No, my question was, this still applies to the Wood River.
Yeah, this is all Wood River.
No,
this is not. This is...
No.
Thank you for...
This applies anywhere.
Anywhere.
If there's a water right that's been curtailed, that's put in the water bank, doesn't it?
It does.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Raybould, what precipitated this was a proposal to move a water right... a groundwater right on the Eastern Snake Plain that was not participating in a mitigation plan and therefore curtailed under some conjunctive administration actions across the trim line and therefore no longer encumbered by a curtailment order.
Okay,
may I ask a question, Brian, then? According to Judge Wildman's decision, there is no trim line, so now where do we go?
I think this policy is still worth putting in place because there, in the future, there may be a trim line again. Possibly.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I might add that the request to rent that water across the trim line was held and ultimately not allowed pending review of the policy by the committee and by the board at large. And so this opportunity is to clarify moving forward in case we receive requests again in the future to rent water that is subject to administrative curtailment through conjunctive management, what the board's policy, what the Water Supply Bank Committee's policy would be.
Did that prompt any questions?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, excuse me, Al Barker, I just got involved to get on the plane, so I'm going to have to dial up. But thanks for accommodating me, and sorry for the background noise.
Safe trip, Al. Safe trip.
See you in 2 weeks. Well, that being said, beings, we've discussed this at some length at our previous meeting, and this meeting, do we have any consensus in regards to where we may be going with this? In regards to the two types of curtailments, Mr. Stevenson?
Mr. Chairman, it's Jeff.
Yeah, Jeff.
I think we ought to make this recommendation to the full board and have all the board take a minute and discuss this either at the work session or at the board meeting the following day and think this through as a board. I can see some problems in the future in people, venue shopping their water right. If you can't use it here, you can use it over there. and put an additional strains on the aquifer that otherwise wouldn't be put in place. And I'm very reluctant to allow a curtailed water right to be diverted somewhere else. You can't do that on a stream. If a water right's curtailed at one point on the river, you can't just take it somewhere else and use it. So I think we need to have some consistency in how we administer these leased rights.
And Mr. Raybould, I certainly respect your caution as we move forward, and the material that was presented to us on the last sentence says that very thing, that the policy will be prepared and presented to the full board at their next meeting for consideration.
Yeah.
All we're looking for right now is that we might recommend it to the full board to consider.
Well, and this is Roger, if I may. I think with all of this, it's really important for them, when we get to the board meeting in 2 weeks, that these little questions have come up, that we've got some really good answers to them, because it does become confusing as we have a special rules for the Wood River Valley, and I can see some confusion down the road if we're not very clear on how these rules work and which ones are working for all water bodies and which ones are working for just the Wood River Valley.
Very good point, because this encompasses all the water rights and not the Wood River Valley, includes the Wood River Valley. So that's a great point, Roger. Whose arm am I going to have to twist?
I make the motion that we recommend this to the full board.
Thank you, Roger.
I'll second it.
Good. It's been moved and seconded that we recommend this to the full board. All in favor say aye.
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 Thank you. You guys are tough today. Number three, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Number three on our agenda concerns management of indefinite water rights that are indefinitely leased to the water supply bank, indefinite leases. The water supply bank changed its policy on lease contract durations in 2011 with the implementation of the fee rule. At that time, we moved to fixed term duration contracts of a maximum of 5 years for lease contracts. Prior to that, we did allow water rights to be leased to the bank indefinitely. Water rights that are leased to the bank will undergo a natural change. Often when they're in the bank, we'll see them either split or sold. Ownership will change and they may be transferred to new locations. It's a complexity of managing the water right itself and the lease contract that the bank has become better at doing. However, it becomes much more cumbersome to do so when a water right is not released from the bank, and over a period of 5, 10, or 15 years, one water right may be split numerous times to the effect where we then have 15 or so owners, numerous pieces of the water right that have been split and transferred, and we're trying to accommodate all requests to either withdraw that water right or to move it elsewhere, and unfortunately it's all tied to that original lease. So sunsetting a lease contract after 5 years gives us the latitude that we need to administer the water rights and execute good housekeeping, if you will, of these contracts. There's also an issue of equity. A majority of water right lessors currently do lease their water right to the bank on a term of fixed duration term. And so we have now effectively two tiers of lessors, those who have everything locked up in perpetuity and those who have to reapply every so often. So the Water Supply Bank would like to move forward in 2015 with updating our records and providing those with water rights that are leased indefinitely to the bank with the opportunity to remain in the bank and then to migrate them to 5 year or less fixed term duration lease contracts. Our plan is proposed to seek a recommendation of support from the committee to then bring it before the board. And if the board approves this plan, then to begin in 2015, moving forward, to contact all lessors who have indefinite leases to advise them that in the future, their indefinite leases will be released from the bank. In advance of that date, provide them with an opportunity either to withdraw their water right from the water supply bank or to migrate to a fixed term lease contract. And once all lessors have been contacted and afforded the opportunity to migrate to a lease contract, a fixed-term lease contract, at that point, we would seek a recommendation from the board to then release all remaining indefinitely leased water rights from the bank.
Questions, comments, board members?
Mr. Chairman, Remington, do we have a pretty accurate mailing record or record how we can contact those people? I have some concerns that when some of those water rights have on those splits particularly have been in the water bank and then the owner loses track of them, do you feel comfortable that you can contact enough the people there that we won't be automatically taking someone's right?
Sure. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Stevenson, great question. There is a time delay factor when a property to which a water right is appurtenant is sold and ownership records are updated. The water supply bank often learns that there's been an ownership change or a split or a transfer after the fact, and it could be as much as 120 days or even more after the actual event. So we're always doing housekeeping to keep the records accurate. So with that caveat, we have a fairly accurate record, but definitely some of the water rights that are leased to the bank, if they've been recently sold or recently undergone a transfer, it's going to require some additional work to identify the current owners and ensure that they've been provided an opportunity either to remain in the bank or to request a release from the bank. That said, I did pull all of the water rights that are indefinitely leased to the bank. There are 215 water rights that are leased in indefinitely. The vast majority are here in western Idaho, largely in the Treasure Valley. Half of them are 107 water rights that are indefinitely leased to the bank are here in western Idaho. There are 40 some odd water rights that are indefinitely leased both in southern Idaho and in eastern Idaho, and then 20 in northern Idaho. So originally we considered contacting lessors regionally, but we realized that the largest part of the pie to eat was going to be here in western Idaho. So we looked at who actually are the current owners of record of those water rights, and we then actually realized that owners of water rights will have water rights scattered across the state. And so, in fact, when we contact an individual, they may have numerous indefinitely leased water rights, some here in western, some in southern, some in eastern. Our plan is to contact lessors in waves based on their last name. So we've broken it up. There's 160 individuals who hold water rights leased to the bank indefinitely, and we're going to contact them in waves of 40 to try and to do this manageably.
Thank you, Remington. And I guess it's just an ongoing thing that we have to work through to get it. But I would think that'd be the proper way.
Sure. Further comments? Question?
Mr. Chairman, this
yes,
is Jeff.
Sure, Jeff.
I just sit here thinking about it a little bit. I'm wondering if a water right that is in the water supply bank is split, if there should have to be some sort of a reapplication when that water right is split to the water supply bank with all the pertinent information of who the owners of the new multiple rights are. And perhaps if we go from one to two or more owners of a block of water, that some additional fees be paid with the accompanying filing of bringing those additional owners into the water supply bank to cover the overhead of dealing with tracking that additional number of water right holders that now have a water right in the water supply bank.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Raybould, I'm very heartened and appreciative of the recognition that there is administrative work to be done and that it does take our time and our human resources to keep on top of these water rights as they undergo changes. We've considered how the bank might add language to our lease contracts that contemplate something similar to which Mr. Raybould just offered. The one complexity that we keep coming back to is that when the board enters into a lease contract for a water right, particularly for an irrigation water right, it is tied to that land and that water right at that time. And if there's a rental of that water right, it becomes very difficult for us to then redo the leases and entertain the notion of releasing a water right if it's already being rented. So with that said, we are considering options to how we might simplify and clarify the process of administering the contracts. So I'd like to look into that further and thank Mr. Rabel for offering that.
Good observation. Other questions, comments?
Well, this is Roger. So this thing on these leases that have been out there forever, are any of them in any way going to cause problems with recreational or conservation easements, and maybe somebody left water for a fishery or something like that?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Chase, great question. I don't know the answer to that until we start digging in. I'm not sure what we're necessarily looking at. However, I might add that the board does have several long-term leases, 20, 30-year leases with rentals associated with them to accommodate water transactions that are happening in the Lemhi and the Salmon and elsewhere. So we have seen lease contracts for fixed duration but extended period to accommodate long-term easements that the board may have. I don't think that we're going to have too much difficulty with contemplating how to update all the indefinite leases, but until we dig in, I'm not sure exactly what we're looking at. And that's why we want to go slow. We don't want to seek a resolution releasing the water rights until we've had a chance to evaluate all of them and contact all of the owners and make sure that we can move forward cautiously.
But this is the first step.
This is the first step.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Are there rentals that are utilizing some of this water that has been leased indefinitely?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Abel, yes, there are.
Okay, would it be appropriate to tie those indefinite leases to those rentals and maybe term out the indefinite lease that's attached to a rental to the rental time frame? If somebody has that water rented for, say, 3 more years or something, that we would not terminate the indefinite lease until that 3 years was up, and then they could reapply for a new lease, and if the same rental wanted to occur, it could occur off of the new lease for a set period of time.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Abel, yes, and in fact, that is the reason why we'd like to first contact all the lessors that have indefinite leases and provide them with the opportunity to obtain a 5-year maximum term lease contract. Even those water rights that are leased to the bank indefinitely, we don't permit indefinite rentals. So if we received a rental for an indefinite lease this year in 2015, the maximum length of time that the rental could occur would be for 5 years, which would correspond to the maximum time that they could receive for the lease contract. So we should be able to avoid tripping over ourselves in terms of aligning rentals and leases.
But Mr. Chairman, my question is this. If I have rented water from the water supply bank that was put into the water supply bank, leased in on an indefinite basis, and I have 3 years left on my term, and we contact the individual and say, you're going to have to pay another $250 and buy yourself 5 years, what if that individual says, never mind, I'm going to terminate my indefinite lease? Then how do we supply the water that we've rented out for the next 3 years?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Rabel, great question. I suspect we'll have a better idea of what we're looking at in terms of long-term or extended-term rentals of water rights that are at least in indefinitely, and if that's the case, then we may have to adjust how we release the water rights pending a board resolution doing just that. I'll be happy to apprise the board members and the committee members of this lease contract update project as we go throughout 2015 and advise on any complexities such as this as we encounter them.
Well, Vince, this is Rock again. The letter you send out needs to be worded real carefully just so we don't cause some of those things we worked up on in the Lamai. That's what made me think about it, was some of the transactions we've done in the Lamai. Mm-hmm. To make sure we don't scare people off.
That's a good point, Roger. Bert, you had a question?
Well, and that's my concern on some of those leases up at the Lamai there are for longer than 5 years, and they're for a different purpose. I think we need to think through that one a little bit, because some of those are tied into the Bonneville Power money, and we need to be careful that we don't exclude somebody up there that solving a fish problem to make a convenience for us. We have to be really careful on that.
Absolutely. Mr. Chairman, Mr. all the board members, thank you. Again, we would move cautiously, and I've been working closely with Morgan Case on all the most recent Columbia Basin Water Transaction Program transactions that are being leased through the bank currently. And Morgan has been preparing lease contracts for extended periods, 20 years or more. But she is already moving forward with lease contracts and easements that might be required for a fixed duration of time. She understands our need to do good housekeeping in the bank. So I guess I would end with saying that I feel comfortable that we can move forward with updating lease contracts, but without ejecting from the bank anything that should not be released until we know how best to update it.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Remington, under some of those cases, it might require a special lease that does allow them to go beyond that period of time in order to qualify for that Bonneville money that those people have been dependent upon.
True.
I'm sure there's going to be exceptions there in that Bonneville area. There just about has to happen.
Well, yeah, I'm really worried because some of those people are pretty tenuous. Either they be shut off or they continue on with that in order to keep that Lamai flowing enough to keep the smolts going.
Right. So I guess with that, I would end. I'll just reiterate that if the Water Supply Bank Committee is in support of recommending that the bank move forward with updating the indefinite lease contracts, we can do so with the caveat that we will be very careful for any leases that are indefinitely leased into the bank that have a board transaction associated with them or any extended duration rental, and make sure that no updating of the lease contract would jeopardize any rental agreement that's currently in play.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Remington, I would move that we present this to the full board on the 23rd and have a full board discussion on that. In the meantime, you might determine if there's a mechanism that we can have protect some of those that need to be.
Thank you, Mr. Stevenson. Do I hear a second?
By Roger, with a comment, you know, Bert just gives us great advice there. I mean, we can do the inventory, but let's make sure before we jump down that path, that we really understand that we're not going to mess up any of those, because some of those guys, we lose that opportunity, we'll never get it back.
Good point, Roger.
Sure.
I take that as a second.
Yeah.
Thank you. All in favor say aye.
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 All opposed say aye. Thank you. Motion's passed. And on to number four.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The last item of the agenda today is in regard to the bank's application of the filing fee rule for lease applications proposing to lease their water to the Water Supply Bank. I might call your attention to a resolution of the board that was issued in 2010 that was in your briefing materials. This resolution of the board authorized the bank to begin negotiated rulemaking regarding the application filing fee of $250. And the resolution's intent was that water rights leased to the bank should pay the filing fee of $250, with the exception of stacked water rights that the department does not allow to be unstacked or to be separated. And so to avoid being cost prohibitive, capping the filing fee at $500 for such rights. The rule, as it was written, says and states that the joint filing fee of $500 applies to overlapping water rights within a common place of use. There has been some confusion that's been expressed to bank staff regarding when the term common place of use is accepted and when it is not, particularly with a permissible place of use, a PPU. The distinction that the bank makes in considering lease applications currently is that water rights that cannot be separated, that are stacked, and that overlap at a common place of use qualify for the joint filing fee. However, if water rights exist within a common but large permissible place of use and they can be used separately and they are not stacked, then they do not qualify for the joint filing fee. This is our current application of the filing fee rule as we were directed by the board resolution and as it's written in rules. In order to address this nuance between a permissible place of use and a place of use, we've updated the lease application form to clarify that. And I'm providing this information to the committee today so that they might ask any questions about how we are currently applying the fee rule, provide any feedback to us regarding the application of the fee rule. And if the committee members are in support of the current application, then I would seek a recommendation to bring this matter before the board so that the board might memorialize the current application of the filing fee through a formal resolution.
Comments, questions? Everybody must understand this one much better than I do.
Mr. Chairman, this is Jeff. If I understand correctly, what Remington is asking us is to memorialize or acknowledge that what the term stack means. Right?
I believe so.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Raybould, we don't use the term stacked in the rules, but it is in the resolution, and that is correct. We are asking the committee to then affirm that the use of the term stacked or the administration of stacked water rights is correct, and we should continue doing as we have done unto this point.
Vince, this is Roger. I just want to make sure I'm clear on this. The fees we're talking about, we're not raising fees, are we? They're staying the same on all of these?
Yes. We're not changing any rules whatsoever. And I can appreciate the complexity of this particular issue. And I know that it's going to take a little chewing, but Remington's done his best to explain it to me. And I understand, Jeff, that you kind of hit on the head there in regards to it being stacked and where it's being used, and that's the complexity of the issue. It's where it's permissible, right?
That's correct. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Rabel, other members of the committee, the department considers that when multiple water rights from potentially different sources or from the same source are used for the same beneficial use of water at the same place of use and they overlap, that they become stacked. And after a period of time, they are not able to be unstacked. And when someone proposes to lease a water right to the water supply bank, they cannot lease one right without leasing all of the rights. They cannot be unstacked, they cannot be unbundled. However, water rights that exist within a permissible place of use can be rearranged yearly. The water right holder has the opportunity to bring water rights together or to use them separately. And because the department does not view those as stacked, we can separate those water rights when they come into the bank. They have separate lease contracts. We can rent them separately. It would be an enlargement of a stack water right if we accepted one of the water rights in, but not all of the water rights. And so therefore, the joint filing fee allows us to accept numerous water rights in at one time and consider those with a capped fee.
Thank you, Remington. Did that clarify it?
Yeah. Okay.
Not totally.
Well, isn't it just as simple as if I have four water rights that all have a place to use the same 40 acres, and I want to put that water in the water supply bank, the fee that I would be charged would be capped at $500. If sure. I have four water rights for four different parcels of ground, and I want to put all four of them in the water bank, then I would have to pay $250 for each of the four water rights, or a total of $1,000. Isn't that how it's supposed to work?
That's the way I understand it.
That's correct.
Okay.
Bert, does that help clarify that?
It takes quite a lot to clarify something for me. In combination with some of these leases, you and I need to talk, Remington, so that I understand.
Certainly.
Where we're headed.
I might just add, at the risk of introducing further complexity, there is a condition whereby water rights may not overlap at the same parcel, but instead are diverted from the same point of diversion. And as such, each of the water rights has a combined limit, a diversion rate or a diversion volume. And so even though they're not used at an overlapping place of use, because of that nexus of connectivity, again, one right cannot come into the bank without all the rights coming in. Hence why the language that was written to the filing fee rule also allowed for water rights that have a common diversion rate or diversion volume to qualify for the joint filing fee.
Single source,
again, not separable in terms of coming into the bank and then being rented out. Ultimately, the application of this rule is such that we can avoid enlarging a water right by bringing it into the bank by ensuring that all the water rights that it is connected to are not separated when it is leased in, and when it's rented out, they're all combined together.
Very important that we don't have an enlargement. Further questions? Are we ready to make that recommendation to the full board?
Mr. Chairman, I move we make the recommendation to the board.
Thank you, Jeff. Do I hear a second?
I would second it.
Thank you, Bert. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Thank you, board members.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With that, I have no other further items for the agenda. I'll stand for any questions, if there are any.
Vince, this is Roger.
Sure, Roger.
As I understand it, I want to make sure we're clear on this. Policy 1 is the only one that's specifically for the Wood River Valley. 2, 3, and 4 would be generic to the whole state.
That's true. That's correct.
Okay. And Remington and Vince, this has been a real tough issue, and I want to thank you for working on it. Because and Remington, you'll have tough questions at the board meeting. We always ask you tough questions. You're getting used to it, but I mean, because this is more complicated than it seems on the surface. It appears to me.
And Mr. Chairman, I think what we really have developed today is the basis for a good discussion in our work session. That's coming up the 21st or whenever that is.
22nd.
And speaking to Remington before the meeting, we kind of anticipated this, and I think it's going to be one that those of us that have questions, maybe we need to write those down before that work session, and we can really discuss those so that we completely understand this before we go to resolution. They're approving resolutions. Resolutions will be ready for us. Any further questions, thoughts? The last thing on our agenda is adjournment. I would so entertain that.
Mr. Chairman, I would suggest that maybe where Mr. Rabel's at, he would have plenty of time to think and mull this through and have the solution for us, Jeff.
And that
I'll
means,
see what I can do.
That means that
have fun.
That means that you're relegated to your motel room, is that right?
Not a chance of that happening.
Thank you, gentlemen, for your participation.
We've got a lot by the beach.
Yeah, I'm looking at a swimming pool right now.
Thank you, gentlemen, for your participation.
Okay.
Any further
Thanks,
questions?
Thanks, guys. I move that we adjourn then.
Adjourn.
Thank you.
All right, we'll see everybody.